Hi, everyone. You're listening to In the Open, a podcast by Mental Health America, where we talk all things mental health related.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's Teresa and America, and we have a special guest, Jenny.
Hi.
We are going to be talking about the struggle that is real when we don't know exactly who we are. And what I mean by that, is like the struggle in identifying yourself, going through like the ideas of who you are as a person when you may identify as multiracial or as an immigrant or anything that kind of is just mixed up because we just don't fit into one box.
Jenny, before we start, do you want to share a little bit about who you are and why you're here with us?
Sure. So I am the digital marketing manager at Mental Health America, which means I run a lot of our digital platforms like social media, email, and web. But the reason why I'm here on this particular podcast is because, full disclosure, I am mixed. I am half Chinese and half Puerto Rican. And that's been like a huge part of my identity, is coming to terms with both of those things and also being raised as like a first generation American. So my parents were both immigrants from their respective countries, but I grew up here. So it's just kind of been a clash of cultures and nationalities and identities, and finding out where I belong and accepting those parts of myself have been like a huge part of, I guess, my journey or growth.
Do you ever get the question, because you just described like the non-snarky answer to the question that I'm sure all three of us get all the time, which is, what are you?
Or where are you from?
Yeah,
that's the slightly less offensive. There's like, there must be a spectrum of like, it's not offensive, but you're still like, what?
It is offensive.
What are you? I don't get offended. I don't know why.
It's isolating, you know? That's what it is. It's isolating. It's like, you don't belong. That's the kind of like underlying message in there.
Maybe I'm going to leave feeling more offended now because I realize the way that you
are. No, but like, what's funny about what you're saying, Teresa, is like, you're saying it's not offensive. You know why? And this is my take on why you don't think it's offensive. Because we're so normalized to having people ask that question. It's like, where are you from? You don't ask that of other people. All of a sudden you're like, oh no, I'm from Wisconsin or Minnesota. No, no, no. We want to know where you're really from.
But I didn't always get where you from either. I think the weirder one is, what are you? Because I'm just,
I've
like,
never had that asked human? Of me.
Really?
I have. I've had both. So me in particular, it's weird because I get those two. I get, what are you? Which makes me feel extremely weird because it's like, I'm a person, I guess. Or like, where are you from? And Virginia, I guess. I was like, where's your family from? Which is the follow-up question, right? But the third question, which I don't know if you guys get as much, but it's like, then the third question is, ¿hablas español? So like, some people see me as Hispanic, but other people see me as like Asian-ish, but like not quite Asian.
That makes me think of something that happens where, like, let's say I go to a store, a government office, any type of kind of formal setting, and I'll walk up to the counter or whatever. And then let's say the person is presenting as Hispanic and they'll be like, in Spanish, can we help you? And it's like, yes, you can. And I respond in English. And I take offense to that. It's like, why do you assume that I can't speak English?
I wonder, so like, this is something that I thought of. It's like, if my last name had been something different, would I be identifying the way I do now? Like, would I have gravitated towards my Asian American side because my last name is Chang? Or if my father was the one that was Hispanic and they had my grandfather's last name, which is Sardina, like, would I have identified more as Latinx? So I wonder if even my name had really put the roadmap in front of me of like how I was going to identify growing up. And it's weird because I'm kind of thankful for it, that I'm like, oh man, I have proof. I have proof that I am Asian. And it's weird to feel validated because my last name is so Asian presenting.
Wait, but tell me a little about your journey. So tell me about what that felt like growing up and struggling with being biracial. You have identified more with your Chinese family side?
Oh, for sure. I definitely identify more as Asian American than I have with my Latinx side. And I think that's because I have lots more family that's Asian. So they're either Cambodian or Chinese or Vietnamese or Lao. And I was just surrounded by so many more people because like my mom's side of the family is just her, her sister, her mom, and her dad. And that was it. Those were the Hispanic people in my life. And they're all very white presenting. They are Spaniard in origin. So they're very European.
I think this is the interesting question that comes out of all of our experiences, right? You don't question your identity because it's just happening. It's just part of development. You know, you're growing up, you're learning whatever's around you. And like Jenny was mentioning, right? She is more attached to like her Asian side because the family that was surrounding her was more Asian than Hispanic. I think you don't ask those questions until much later in your development when you're like, who am I? Where do I fit in?
So I can actually tell you the exact time where I was really confronted with my multiracial identity. It's a very specific time. And it was when I was applying for college.
Okay.
That late?
Yeah. Because I had always identified as Asian American and my last name was Chang and people had generally accepted me as half Chinese. They always asked what the other half was, but they didn't really care. But like they were like half Chinese, Jenny's Chinese, because like the other half didn't really matter in most people's eyes. But when I applied for college, my mom told me not to check the box that said other or multiracial. She said, check the box that says Hispanic or Latino. And I said, why? And she was like, because you're going to get into college better. And I was like, but I'm not really Hispanic or Latino. And there was like a lot of guilt because I was like, am I playing the system? Am I playing that card? But at the same time, I was like, but I am Puerto Rican. My mom is from Puerto Rico. She grew up in Puerto Rico. She's Puerto Rican. So that was like the time where I was like confronted full face with like my multiracial identity. Do I own up to being Puerto Rican and put that little box down that I was Hispanic Latina? Or do I just check multiracial?
See, like for me, it was around middle school. So I'm talking about like 13, 14. It's kind of like your teenage years. Like I knew that I was born somewhere else when I came to the United States. I knew that, but I never experienced anything that was like, tell me who you are, identify yourself kind of thing.
Until you were 13?
Yeah, around that age, because going from like elementary school into middle school, all of a sudden, the groups within middle school were divided by race. They automatically, that happened. And I didn't fit into that because I was always in the gifted and talented classes. So most of my peers were white. So the people that were Hispanic, maybe there were one or two other Latinos that were part of this, you know, cohort of people. But then everybody was like, but you're Latino. And I was like, yeah. And like, what does that have to do with it? But it was like, it was necessary for you to define yourself within that space. And then I had to accept it. Like, yeah, I am Latino. I never denied it, but I was forced into that place. And then I really had to confront what that meant for me and being like, I'm not just a Latino in a statistic, yo. Like, I got goals and I have things that I want to do in my life and I don't fit in either one of these spaces.
Yeah.
So I was just like, you know, people would be like, you're weird. And I'd be like, that's right.
So maybe I'm used to the question, what are you? Because my earliest memories of not feeling like I fit in or belonged is as early as 3.
Really?
Yeah, I grew up in Los Angeles in a city called Wilmington, which is like South Bay, 99% Mexican, Latino. And like, I remember eating Doritos, Mexican Doritos, okay, people, not Doritos, white people Doritos, Tapatio, lime, Doritos. and convincing my mother that I was Mexican. And I was like, Mom, I'm Mexican. And she was like, you're not Mexican. And I was like, well, then I'm American. And she was like, you are not American. Because she was an immigrant from Vietnam. And she was so worried that we were all going to lose our Vietnamese identity that I fought with her about this until I was in my teenage years. Like, I was just like, I'm American. And she was like, you're Vietnamese and I'm going to force you to go to Vietnamese school. Where I was bullied by kids and told I was a banana and a traitor to my people or whatever. So I obviously did not fit into that group. So I basically got the what are you or what's wrong with you question everywhere. And sometimes it felt like it was an attack and I was always attacked the worst by my Vietnamese cohort, which probably is why for a long time I struggled with my Vietnamese identity, even though I am 100% Vietnamese.
When you speak of that, what it makes me think about is the fact that up until I was about 13, I understood Spanish, but I couldn't really speak it. So I could have conversations with my parents, but they would speak in Spanish and I would answer them in English. And then we went back to Bolivia. And I remember, like, entire family, you know, they're speaking, I can talk to them, but I would only talk to my parents and my brother. And there was this, like, everybody laughs at this story because, like, something was going on and they were going to eat something that I didn't like. And I go to my dad and I was like, Daddy, give me some money. And he was like, for what? And I was like, I'm not going to eat that. I'm going to go buy a hamburger. And then everybody's like, what did she say? You know, and like everybody's like laughing their butts off. But it's like ties to your connection, like with your language, with your, like how your mom is like, no, you were Vietnamese. You cannot forget that.
I kind of wanted to touch on that, like that guilt that it's your fault for losing your cultural heritage is so acute. I always felt like I had to overcompensate, you know, like because I was never Asian enough. I was never Puerto Rican enough. Mm-hmm. My best friend was Korean American and like she looks Korean. And if she says she's Korean, like people are going to accept that. But for me, saying that I was Chinese, I felt like people weren't really going to accept that. And I don't really speak Cantonese as well. I'm not fluent. I know I'm not. I can speak some, but I always felt like it's my fault. Like I didn't practice enough. I didn't listen to my elders enough. I didn't go to school to learn Chinese. And therefore, it's my fault that I am doing a disservice to my family in terms of losing my cultural heritage. So when I have kids, I cannot teach them Cantonese. I cannot teach them Spanish because I didn't speak it enough. And therefore, it's my fault that I'm going to pass on these issues, this guilt, this isolation, this shame onto my kids. And also, full disclosure, my husband is Korean. So our kids, when we have them, are going to be half Korean, a quarter Chinese, and a quarter Puerto Rican. And so it's like, will they feel this kind of like confusion and guilt? Like, are they going to be like, I'm Puerto Rican? It's like, will they feel like they can own up to that identity? Or are they going to feel like they're so far removed from their cultural heritage because I wasn't responsible enough to learn it, to pass it on to them? And as an adult, I'm only realizing that. But as a child, like, I wasn't caring about that. So there's just been a lot of, you know, like, growing and evolving and dealing with all that shame and guilt of, like, essentially doing a disservice to your ancestors and, like, creating these children that are technically of their blood but will never know or understand what it is to be Chinese or what it is to be Puerto Rican.
I think that's something that's very real and tangible for people that struggle in just kind of figuring out who they are, where they belong, you know. And part of that is, like, I hear what you're saying in that you feel that and, like, shameful around it. But there's this whole other aspect that's really systemic in a lot of ways in which immigrants function, where you were made to not have an accent when you speak English. So your language, your native tongue was erased on purpose, right? Because a lot of immigrant families felt that that's the only way that your child will be able to actually progress in this country. So in many ways, a lot of people have to reconnect with that much later in life to say, dude, I didn't get that. I didn't get that piece of who I am. And, you know, I was lucky that my parents pushed it on me. But even now, you know, like I have conversations with my fiance where he's a native Spanish speaker. And I'm like, you don't say it that way. And he's like, yes, you do. And I was like, no, you don't. No, that's, and he's like, remember, you learned how to speak Spanish and I knew it. Like, you know, it's so natural. And it's like, wow, the way to throw shade, man.
Oh, man. No, I just remember like going to weddings and any other family gatherings for my Chinese family. And I always overheard the aunties being like, don't worry, she can't understand us in Cantonese. I'm like, I can understand you. Like, I know I don't look like you, but I understand you. Like, please stop talking crap about me in front of my face. When we had weddings, you know, like weddings, people get seated based on the family. And especially when there was like non-Chinese family at the weddings, like our family would be seated there. Despite like the fact that we were part of the family, they would put us with like all the Americans. And that was always like super weird and isolating. And like as a child, you're like, why don't I get to sit with all the other cousins?
My cousins.
And it was like my cousins were all full Asian, but I was the only one that was half. And so I was always seated away from the rest of the Chinese family, which was, you know, oof. Gonna start crying.
I think you're gonna start crying.
No,
we can't have a podcast without someone crying.
Yeah, so, we always do something.
I think that's where it, if people are like, well, how does this even relate to mental health? It's like, if you haven't heard that questioning who you are is about where you fit in and feeling isolated and feeling shame and feeling negative feelings, where I think that there's like a huge human heart part, like of our heart, that wants to feel like we belong somewhere. And if you don't, like that's a pain, right? Like that's a big pain. I don't think I've ever let myself think about it too much. So I just took that pain and I put it on the shelf, y'all.
You know, there's this whole idea too, like a lot of immigrant families, they modify their names, right, to make it American sounding or completely have adopted an American name because same thing. It's easier to function with an American name instead of you having to consistently explain, no, actually, you pronounce it this way. No, actually, you misspelled it or whatever. And recently, so I did a couple of interviews for like Univision, whatever, you know, in Spanish. And so when they put the name up of the person speaking, it says America Paredes, right? But it has America with an accent. And I remember going to my fiance and was like, yo, my name doesn't have an accent. And he's like, yes, it does. I was like, no, it doesn't. None of my documents anywhere have an accent. And he's like, in Latin America, America has an accent. I was like, that doesn't matter. I don't have an accent here. It's here. I'm writing my name. I'm telling you how to say it. And he was like, no. And it blew my mind. But it also made me think about the fact, like, even the way that I pronounce America Paredes, right? And I'm like, why don't I say it America Paredes?
Mm-hmm.
Wait, what is happening? These things that are just consistently part of our processes that you just have to be like, oh my God, it's jarring to think about the complexity of it.
There's a sense of embarrassment when you're someone who isn't fluent or advanced in your native language, when you try to pronounce those words that you're like, you know the words enough to impress non-speakers of the language, but then you feel like super embarrassed if somebody who is a native or fluent speaker of that language hears you. And you're like, oh God, they heard me say Guaylo. It just means white guy. But it's like having an accent because I don't speak it fluently and I'm really embarrassed about it. And there's always this shame that like somebody is going to hear me speaking Cantonese and they're going to be like, who is this white girl trying to speak Cantonese? But it's like, I'm Chinese.
That's probably true. It's like I feel the most anxiety when I have to walk into a Vietnamese supermarket.
Oh my God. And the employees speak to you in like the night language and you're like, oh, it's showtime.
Yeah,
guys.
I gotta prep up for how I'm gonna order my meat in Vietnamese. The challenge though from a mental health standpoint is just like, is that you have to think about these extra things that I don't think people who otherwise don't know what that feels like, they just don't ever have these kinds of thoughts.
Correct.
Ever.
But see, so, we've talked about shame, Teresa, you know, and you and I have explored shame extensively kind of through the podcast, right? Where like if you are living with depression, anxiety, or any kind of mental illness, you feel like you've done something. Right?
Yeah.
You take my the onus. Yes. And
not just like what I did. It's like my being.
Exactly.
And you.
So it's very much in that same way where they're like parallel kind of connections that people can make, because shame is shame. Now, if you've never had to question who you are, what your identity means, that's great. But I don't think you're doing hard work, because you should be questioning it, even if you're white.
So the opposite is the privilege of pride. I don't know if this makes any sense, but like I have never really felt that I could be proud, period. Maybe that says something about my family of origin and why nobody gives you praise for your crap. But there's also like, what am I like? Do I have like national pride? Do I have like... You know what I mean? Like, it feels like some people are like proud to be an American, or I'm so proud to be Vietnamese, or, you know, and I'm like, what am I proud of? I'm proud that I took a shower.
Maybe you have to learn to have pride, because you're speaking to one thing, right? If your family has never kind of helped you develop that aspect of yourself, then it's very difficult to be like, yeah, I did this thing. Look.
But it perpetuates low self-esteem. Like,
of course,
that fit anywhere. Yeah. And you're not proud and you're like, you don't even have...
You're internalizing racism.
It's like not even like, oh, I'm proud to be American. Like, I'm celebrating 4th of July and it's about hot dogs and fireworks. Like, I do want to be proud to be an American. Just, I'm not sure what that means personally in my life, you know?
So when you're the multiracial child of two people who are monoracial, I don't know if those are the right words, but like my parents, the people who birthed me, the people who are arguably the most close to me, will never understand how much I feel like I don't belong. Mm. Despite the fact that they love me, they produced me, but they will never understand what it was like to not belong in either category and having to find my own identity and come to terms with that.
But what resonates in what you're saying, Jenny, in some of the research that I've done around like acculturation and acculturative stress, right? When immigrants come into the United States or any where they're mixing a culture into another culture, what happens, especially with first generation children, right, is what you're saying. You're developing as you should be right here in the United States, and you're getting information from different communities, and all of that at the end is so much stress. And also with the fact that, like, for example, at least within the research that I've done within the Latino community, if you are an immigrant that comes from like a part of Central America, and then you have kids here and your kids are just developing as they should, and they become much more capable in speaking English, writing English, doing everything English-based, right? You come home and your parent is kind of stuck in their culture, and it's complete, like, you're coming up against two walls, right? And mm-hmm. and that's also what you were explaining earlier, Teresa, when you were younger. We were like, well, no, I'm Mexican. And your mom's like, no, no, you're not. No, you're not. You know? So that stress, it's so hard on the person because you're questioning your value.
Right. And there's another thing that I have encountered since meeting my husband, which is the fact that he is an Asian immigrant. He is from South Korea, born in South Korea, raised there, and now he's here in the United States. I did not realize that when speaking to him, I'm very American. I always thought, like, I was so Asian. I am doing my best to be Asian. And then he's like, what the heck are you talking about? I have no idea what you're referencing, what even you're talking about. Like, he just has no clue, right? So then I'm like, oh my God, I'm more American than I thought. But like, what does being American mean? And like, what's my husband's responsibility in keeping his Korean heritage if we have kids? Because he's like the first generation immigrant. And then, no, he is the immigrant parent in our relationship. And I'm going to be the first generation that was born here. And I'm biracial. And it just creates like a whole other dynamic where we're clashing not only in my cultural heritage and his cultural heritage, but also my nationality as an American and his nationality as someone from South Korea. And then do we raise our children with more American values because we live in America? Or do we raise them with like Korean values because he's from Korea? He's not Korean American, which would make him easier between the two of us because we would both understand like systemic oppression in America and the things that our children are going to go through. He doesn't understand that, but I do. So there's a lot of things going on, you know?
When you're referencing the idea of what it is to be an American, you know, you both have kind of mentioned that. I think about when I travel outside of the United States. When I am outside of the United States is when I feel most American.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. Right?
And so that for me personifies as me being able to speak up when I need to, being independent, not having any qualms about being like, excuse me, no, this is not what's supposed to happen. Because normally in the culture, right, Bolivian culture, a woman is very calm. The man is supposed to take charge. And I'm like, psh, whatever. Doesn't matter here. And so when you then like juxtapose that to my life here in the US, then it's like, no. I'm not just American. I'm Bolivian American. I have come to terms with the fact that I am representative of two cultures because my thought processes are more American than Bolivian. My roots are there, but the way that I speak, the way that I carry myself, all of that is based on American ways of thinking.
Yeah, I agree. I'm obviously American, but I also think of my culture as being very specifically Southern Californian.
Oh yeah, you completely fit that.
Oh, that geographic.
Go there.
That geographic identity.
Oh, yeah.
I am from Northern Virginia. Northern Virginia in particular, because it's so different from the rest of Virginia.
Yeah. So is that what we've done for ourselves? Is like, how have we found our identity? Like, what's this? Where do people land in this?
I think you're hitting the nail right there where you're saying it's a process. You don't just one day are like, boom, I found the solution. This is the way it's going to be from now on. I think it's a continuous kind of process of growth that has to happen. But part of that includes you asking questions and asking very difficult questions of your family and learning about that experience, and then figuring out what can I do to connect with these parts of myself if I want to, right? Because you may not want to.
Yeah. And I'm super curious in what Jenny is going to say, but the best I can summarize what I've done is that everything around my identity was so confusing. When I say that I put it on the shelf, I really did. Like, I think I just did not want to tackle those questions. So I never did. And that's why I'm surprised when you guys say things and I'm like, no, I don't want to go there. I don't want to reinforce this feeling of isolation and othering. And the only thing I've been able to do besides extreme avoidance, which is my master skill, is I identify with my personality traits that make me feel comfortable. So like I've doubled down on my humor. It's like if I had to ask the question, who am I? I probably feel most comfortable with being like, I am a irreverent jerk.
You're not a jerk, Teresa.
I mean, I say that in the best sense. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel very comfortable with identifying that I've basically used inappropriate humor as a coping skill for everything in my life. And that is the most comfortable identity phrase follow up to that question of like, who am I? And that probably says a lot about how much work I have to do. And I hate you both for making me ask these questions. You suck, both of you.
You know, that's really interesting that Teresa mentioned that her coping was to like double down on her personality traits. Whereas I think because I never had the solid base of like who I am, like I was never like, I'm Chinese American, I'm Puerto Rican American. Like I can't totally claim those identities because I'm both and also neither because I'm American versus my parents who were both immigrants. And like I actually doubled down on both of them, you know? I reached a point of self-acceptance where I just was like so beyond the shame of being only half, you know, in quotation marks, you're only half, you know? And I think it was when I came to MHA and somebody was like, oh, like, what are you? You know, like that question came back here. What are you? Because like my last name's Chang. Like I look the way I do. And I was like, oh, I'm just like, I'm only half Chinese, half Puerto Rican. They're like, whoa, you're like double. You have like double the amount of like cultural heritage to pull from. Like you have this very... I don't remember who it was at MHA that said that, but I feel like it struck such a chord with me when I came in that I was like, yeah, I get both. I get both worlds, you know, and I can own it. Like, it is okay for me to say that I'm Puerto Rican because I am. Like, who is going to be like, no, you're not? Or like, who is going to be like, oh, you're not Chinese? Like, I am. And, you know, It came to like a point of radical acceptance of my identity where I just got to pull my cultural heritage like a trick, like a party trick, you know? Like somebody thought I was one thing and I was like, aha, I'm also Puerto Rican. And then it just became like a cool like, whoa, like you're also Puerto Rican? Like that's so dope. And it became like a source of pride, you know, to become biracial because I had such like a rich history that I could pull from. And people always wanted to hear, like, how did your parents meet? Or, like, what makes you, like, what is about Puerto Rican stuff that you like? Or, like, what about the Chinese wedding stuff that you like? And I got to talk about all these things because I got to experience both of them, which is, like, something that not everyone has a chance to do. Like, my mother was never going to know about all these Chinese traditions until she met my dad. And I just got to experience them naturally because I'm a part of both of them. I actually doubled down on my cultural heritage. I do think that I'm coping with humor and like, you know, I understand like my personality traits, but being able to say that I'm both and that saying that I'm both is fine and that I'm proud of being both was like, you know, that's part of the journey. And it's kind of funny to say that MHA was a part of that radical self-acceptance because it was that one person. Whoever it was, I don't remember. I feel bad. But whoever had said that, it like made such a huge impact on me. And I'm sure like they didn't think about it. Like they probably don't even remember that moment. But like when they were like, whoa, but you're like double. Like that was the first time someone had ever said that to me instead of you're only half. And I felt like I was more than enough. I was more than enough, you know? That was the thing.
That's like the half full, right? Half empty.
It was neither. It was overflowing.
Yeah, dude.
Oh, I love that because it's, I don't think we knew that we were going down this path before you said it when you were telling your story. I was like, oh, Jenny feels pride. Like, that's what she's, this is what the tone in your voice and the words in your voice are saying, right? Is like you transitioned from this feeling of shame about who you are to feeling pride and proud of who you are. And that's like so cool.
Yeah. And like, I'm proud to say that MHA was actually a really significant part of that when I came in. And I feel bad because I don't remember who it was that was like, but you're double.
Do you feel proud about who you are, America?
Oh, yeah.
You're swimming with pride?
No. This is that comes off as real cocky, but it's not that. It's this. I have come to accept that I am who I am. And it's part of that development that has happened. There were times when I really questioned what was happening. There are even times now where I'm like, dude, am I thinking about this in the wrong way? And then the other side of me is like, nah, forget it. So I really do feel proud, and I really do identify as Bolivian and American, because every single aspect of who I am is mixed with all of that. It's not just one or the other, you know? And like, if you go further, you know, into like what Jenny's thinking about, you're now moving in a direction where you have to integrate another culture, right, into your life, because eventually you'll have children. And Teresa, you're exploring this with your kids right now. And it's just an evolution of what has to happen or what will happen.
And it says something about tapping into that feeling to help you identify when you found yourself, because pride as a feeling probably is a good indicator of belonging, right? Mm-hmm. As an opposite of shame. So if I ask myself, like, who am I and what am I proud of? Like, instead of asking, like, who am I, which is a statement of belonging, if I say, who, what am I proud of? Like, that does tell me who I am. I'm proud that I'm a survivor. I'm a fighter. There's probably something there about my identity that I would say that I'm proud of, and I have those feelings, and it tells me who I am and where I belong and how much I've lived through and where I'm going. And like I said, I don't think we realized this is where we were going to go, but it's where we landed.
But I really think it's like a critical thing that has to happen for people to just, whatever it is, whatever is othering, right? Whatever pushes you to consider your value or your worth, you have to look at the structures that are around you that impact that thinking and really question them, because a lot of things are imposed upon us. And it's not until we start pushing back and asking questions like, wait, why is that one door shut and this one open for me? You know, and like the example that you were talking about, like college and stuff, there's so much to all of this. But I really appreciate that you shared your story with us, Jenny. I think it resonates with a lot of people. Because I don't know if people know this, individuals who identify as multiracial are a huge portion of the U.S. population.
Right.
Just an FYI.
It's also a sort of pride that I'm like, oh, we're the fastest growing sect of the population. Hey, mixed babies, here we are.
That's right.
yeah, I kind dude. Of, I don't know if this is like an appropriate way to sign off, but back in 2017, I took a trip to Cambodia, which is where my dad was born. And one of the things that like made me so happy was the fact that when we got our visas, because I was the child of somebody who was Cambodian and I had Cambodian blood in me, I got what is essentially Cambodian citizenship because they considered me Cambodian. And whoa. It was pretty cool because I had never really owned up to it or considered myself Cambodian. Like I would have never been like, yeah, I'm Cambodian, like treat me Cambodian, whatever. But they did, you know, the consulate was like, all right, full-fledged stamp. Here you go. Citizenship. Yep. You can live, work, die, breathe, marry here, whatever.
Dude.
So what can we say? Keep growing. Keep thinking about what you're proud of. Yeah. What you're proud of. That's key to anything. And thank you. So as we always say, keep fighting in the open. And we will talk to you guys next week. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.